This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Lefty Pinkos.
That's right.
Confirms we're on Joy 94.9.
It's seamless in here. And that presented by Brian Emma was rather seamless too, wasn't it? You're happy to be on the system, Emma?
I am. It's very exciting.
Yes, it is. It's rather. We have a fantastic show lined up for y'all this week. It's kind of a bit of a coup, as I call it. I called it yesterday. We had a bit of a chat to an amazing man called Scott Rankin, who is part of Big Heart Theatre, or Big Heart. They're an arts project, rather, based here in Australia. And they're probably one of the most amazing, most innovative arts companies around, because they present high-end, really wonderful art, but it's actually based or embedded in this socially conscious practice that involves community engagement, drawing out stories and narratives. And yeah, so I've seen some of their work before, and Emma, you haven't, have you? So
no, I haven't. Brian has been so excited about this week, I'm not going to lie. I think this is, in my time on the show, this is the most excited I've seen Brian about a guest, and you've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, so I know that it was very exciting for you.
It was very, very exciting. And this week we got in Scott Rankin, and it was a pre-recorded interview, I guess, and we chatted to him about Big Heart, his what their philosophy and what their practice is like and how they started, and because they're part of this year's Melbourne International Arts Festival. And so we thought, let's get them in to talk about their wonderful practice, but also about the things that they'll present as part of this festival. So
to find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma, and we're joined in the studio this week by Scott Rankin. He's the creative director and the executive producer of Big Heart, an Australian arts company that do work across a multitude of platforms, particularly around theatre. But thanks for joining us, Scott. It's really great to have you in here.
It's great to be here.
Now, I'm going to be upfront and say, look, I've been a long admirer of your work, and I've seen a few of your theatrical productions, and I guess with any of your artistic projects, you have this amazing ability looks at community engagement and eliciting community stories or narratives that then make up the crux of what you're presenting. What's the philosophy behind those processes or that way of working?
Well, there's a couple of things. We look for invisible stories that we think need to be told, and we have this little catch cry, I suppose, that it's much harder to hurt someone if you know their story. So we take those two things together, and if you illuminate a story, the assumption is that people will become aware of that, and then there'll be less damage done to people in that situation. The other thing is that usually in this context we frame things as here is a terrible community, or here this is a shocking situation, or whatever, but in actual fact I tend to see those people who are living these really rich and often quite traumatic stories are often the holders of a gift. And it's a gift of story that can be, to use an old word, sort of prophetic, or it can illuminate the place we want to go. And we're interested in setting up projects that find the currency in that story, and then take the community on a journey through the process of making the story and present it in, high-end status junkie festivals like the Melbourne Festival. And then there's this new currency about that story.
You actually do have this beautiful mix of presenting, rights holders or people that have had those experiences around those stories on stage. Do you have anxieties around that? Does it present a challenge in the theatrical world?
Look, certainly. I mean, we're touring with Hip Bone Sticking Out, we're touring with around 50 people. Most theatre companies would look at 6 to 10 people as a big show to present that. But, when you're touring people who are very elderly, or people who have a whole lot of addictions, or a lot of young people, you have to structure the care, the duty of care around that. So often our companies are quite big. So there are those, budget-sapping aspects to it. And there's also this thing that, you know, you want to make the only thing that matters the virtuosity of the art that you're creating, and at the same time, the only thing that matters the process of creating it, and then hold those two things in tension. And that kind of non-linear approach is not a very Western approach. So you're trained out of that stuff. You would just cut, you know, a lot of things to get to the virtuosity, and that's the highest value. But for me, what, you know, 21st century audiences are craving, especially in this age of noughts and ones, is new authenticity. So contact, a new kind of contact. They're craving a kind of legitimate intimacy, human intimacy, and they're craving a new, a sense of ritual, and that people might think that this arcane form of, you know, live performance is on the way out, but if you think of what the ephemeral nature of theatre, that's exactly what it is. It's new ritual. It's new authenticity. It'll never happen again. It's me with you that night on stage. It's and I look to ways of removing the homogeny of professionalism and bringing in this virtuosic authenticity. So it's hard to explain very quickly how you do that, but that is the core of the company. That's what we're shooting for. That's why you can have somebody who's incredibly trained and is a vocal gymnast, or they're, you know, music theatre trained, and have that next to somebody with no training. And my obligation as a director is to find the authenticity in the highly skilled and somebody who doesn't yet know their skills, and not require the wrong thing of each of those performers. And sometimes we're successful, and sometimes, you know, it's rubbish. Mm-hmm. But mostly we do the rubbish elsewhere and then bring it into the festival.
Yeah. And you've presented in Melbourne, but you've travelled the world with your shows and your productions. Give our listeners an insight into where you've been internationally.
Well, I suppose the last really interesting thing was to be in London at South Bank with Namajira, sold out in an instant, and we could have done twice as many shows. And then we got a call from Buckingham Palace because the Queen wanted to meet Derek Lynch, who plays the Queen, mm-hmm. and Trevor Jamieson, playing Albert Namajira. And, you know, we had this crazy 20-minute audience with the Queen and Prince Philip, where he said some of the most outrageously wonderful things to us privately. And, and you know, we were there for much too long, and it was, you know, it was just one of these crazy events that you wouldn't in 100 years think would happen. But we're also working in Rotterdam, and one of the producers is off to Shanghai for a big shipping project that we're doing internationally. So, you know, it's but that was a bit of a crazy highlight. We just, you know, rock up to the Queen. We had none of the right clothes. They waived all the protocols, and, you know, we wandered around Buckingham Palace.
I remember in Namajira Derek did a really camp depiction of the Queen. Did you get to present that to her?
Well, it was in the show. They didn't come to the show, but it was Derek who plays that incredible role, met the Queen and shook hands and curtsied. and then also met Camilla and Prince Charles. And I tell you what, Camilla, in person, she's quite an interesting, you know, she has terrible television, but, you know, she's... Mm-hmm.
Quite good one-on-one.
Yeah, she's on fire.
Nice little insight there.
I got the hots for Camilla, I think.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we're chatting to Scott Rankin from Big Heart. We'll be back with more chats.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Your first project, I think, was back in about 1992, and that was a story out of Burnie. In Tasmania, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was a project called Girl, and it was looking at young women offenders, really, or juvenile offenders. And Burnie it's an interesting part of the world. It's like this little microcosm, like a miniature Port Kembla. It's Port Kembla. It's very industrial. It's a paper mill town, and it was changing a lot in those days. And there was quite a, as the mill closed down or, you know, slowly reduced its workforce, there was a lot of pressure on families and offending rates went up. And we went in to work with some young people who were offending weekly as a group, and ran this project that was, you know, it was theatre-based, and it was a very exciting visual work. And it it went to the National Festival of Australian Theatre that Robin Archer was running in Canberra, and, you know, it was, people loved it. But at the same time, the group that were offending, the offending rates dropped from one offence a week to one offence in 10 months. So it was the beginning of Big Art, and we went, here's an interesting thing. That statistic of one offence in 10 months is worth a lot of money to the taxpayer. And here is a show that hasn't cost a lot of money to put on. So can we combine, socially conscious processes of making work with beautiful work? And it was something we were evolving as we were doing it. But quite quickly we realised evaluation was important, that we had separate audiences politically, audiences locally, audiences with festivals, and we had to be really savvy about how we built those up. And if we played our cards right with the political audiences, we could build funding, alternative funding strategies, and really that was the genesis of the model of creating, unusual work in this way.
You don't just work with people who are affected, in the case of the Burnie Project, young offenders, but you actually deal with people like the police, MPs. Who else might kind of constitute a project when you go out there?
This might sound a bit wanky. Is that all right on this?
That's fine. You can do that.
Good. Yep.
Bring it on.
if you're a playwright, which is one of my core skills, you think about dramaturgy quite a lot, the kind of svelte structure of a piece that can get you to the highest points of drama and in the most economical way, I suppose. And audiences love that stuff. And what I started to think about was the community dramaturgy, that there's really similar ways of thinking about the process of making the work and who the individual audiences are and how you can bring different groups of people together. And it is a dramatist's eye, in a way, that triggers that. And then there's also the notion of diplomacy, rather than thinking about change, which is, in this current climate of, terrorism, if you think people who want to bring about change are actually walking a knife edge, with terror, because it's trying to convince people to be something else. And, love and fanaticism are very close concepts, in a way. So the idea of diplomacy... it's an emotional intelligence writ into a cultural context, and I found that fascinating. So, putting those two concepts together, you can invite into, say, a project in Sydney at Redfern in a housing commission area, a project called Sticky Bricks. We were called in. There was, people were closing their doors. It was a vertical suburb of 900 people, and there was one. What they called a swan dive, in a very callous way, but somebody leaping off the roof per month. There was, a lot of suspicion of violence as well as violence itself. And so it was under siege. And by going in and working with three partners, housing, arts in community and the police, and everybody playing their part in it, we could tease away the kind of suspicion and fear, and people began to open their doors again.
And you got awarded a safety award as a result of that project, yeah?
Yeah, look, I mean, there was a World Health Organization award for a safe community, and just to be really clear, I like to think that it was the community that was awarded that. Mm-hmm. They themselves taking action with police and housing and us. But that's the sort of dramaturgy that I love. I mean, it was beautiful on the opening night. We created this utopia in the car park of this housing commission area where we lay grass, like live grass, and made this park and had all this catering that was brought in, and you get this lunchbox that was in a wheelbarrow, and you had to all work together to build your own seating, which were these huge fridge-sized Coolite blocks that everybody sat on, so you were assembling the world of it before you could watch any art. And, so we were very utopian about it. And then, 2 minutes to the opening night, there was a stabbing right out the front. Police came in, sirens, people running everywhere. It was just like the most magic beginning you could ever hope for.
Yeah.
Nobody was seriously hurt.
Bit of an attention grabbing. Yeah. It's like, who needs publicity?
That's right. No, not that sort of fight. We want this. Yeah, it was great, but it was also a real, it just brought us down to earth about that project. But it was very effective, and it would have been more effective if the values of the housing department were... understanding that this is not a one-off thing. You have to keep building community. Communities are always in flux. Mm-hmm. But so, it I'm not sure how they're going now, but there were things learnt. People, you know, got old and passed away, and, you know, some of it's happening still, but...
From what I've read, you will work with a particular community for quite a while in developing a project. Like, these aren't short-term things. What sort of time frame would you normally be working with a particular community for?
Well, not less than 150 weeks. And we have expanded it a bit because we've started to weave more complexities into it, I suppose. So up in Roebourne, where Hip Bone Sticking Out has come from, we've just done 4 years. And we're shifting the project but doing another 3 years in Legacy, where we're going to be a company in residence at a cultural centre. And the reason that we're very particular about that is that in high trauma communities where there's a lot of needs, it's very easy to become, to build the dependency rather than build the independence of individuals. And they are craving for, you know, cultural infrastructure and social infrastructure, and you can become another nose in the trough, or you can become a large NGO. And you build up and you take away, and you leave a legacy, and you build up the capacity for new forms of what you were doing to take place, rather than going, okay, we'll build this and leave it in situ. And because really, communities are groups of people who have learned stuff, you know. So it can't be short term. And we have to watch the other end of it as well, that we're not building the dependency in.
Back in 2004, you presented a piece at the Melbourne Festival that was a bit of a departure from your dramaturgy and your theatrical work. It was Winter Bed. It was about, a bed in Fed Square, or the site for Fed Square. And I remember kind of stories around town in the festival among artists saying that it was great. There was this bed that we could jump into of a night if we had, you know, a bit too much time at the festival club or a bit too much time checking out the art. Can you tell us about that project, Scott?
Yeah, look, it was... It was the very first time anything happened in Fed Square, that we pushed the hoardings back so that the corner of Flinders and Swanson was available to us. And that used to be an area that homeless people had slept, and, of course, that had been taken away from them now. So, and we were doing a big project in the Capitol Theatre called Not at Home, and some of the people from the streets who used to sleep there were in that. So we went, well, let's have a response to their setting. And it was Robin Archer's, second festival?
Yeah, the text one.
So we built this mobile bed where people could lie in the bed and see films made by, on a flat screen at the end of the bed, made by people who are experiencing not being at home from around the country. And we had a list of people who were in the bed, and then the public could fill the bed as well. So I think Robin Archer hopped into bed with Kerry Armstrong that night. Yeah. I don't want to be controversial here.
Exclusive here on Joy.
Yeah. And it was just a way of reminding people of some of the subtleties of, you know, urban design. The desire to create better environments can knock out the people who are invisible, you know. But those people themselves were running the bed and contributing their film stories to people who were then in the bed. So it was a bit of a play on that, really. Yeah.
And you presented that same, a similar work, I guess, in Canberra last year in 2013, and it involved MPs and whatnot, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, Robin, you know, she wanted to get into bed with Tanya Plibersek. No, she didn't.
I can understand why.
Yeah, Tanya, she's hot. No. We did pull it out to and put it on again. It was really in a response to a group of people up there who approached us. They had responded to the bushfires and people losing homes up there, and had thought a lot about homelessness, and they were looking for a way to express that in the centenary of Canberra. And Robin talked about this project, and they said, that sounds great. So we kind of facilitated it for them in a way, yeah, as a response to local homelessness.
Beautiful. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma, and we're chatting to Scott Rankin, the creative director and the executive producer of Big Heart. We'll be back.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're back on Joy 94.9 on Lefty Pinkos with Brian and Emma, and we're back with Scott Rankin. And I just want to ask you now, you've got a couple of pieces on in Melbourne at the moment as part of the Melbourne Festival. One of them is Hip Bone Sticking Out. Can you tell us about that, the story behind that, and why you got involved with the community and have chosen to tell this story.
Hmm. Sure. Look, we were invited to go up to the small town of Roebourne in the Pilbara, at the centre of the sort of mining hub, or the cultural resources boom. It's in that location, but it's a town with some negative reputations. It's a place where a young man called John Pat died when he was 16, 30 years ago, or 31 years ago now, in a prison cell after an altercation with police, and that triggered the Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody. And he became known as the boy, and it's quite a significant person in the landscape. And it's also the Pilbara is an exquisite part of the world, and Roebourne is right next to a thing called the Burrup Peninsula, a place up there, and that's the world's biggest collection of outdoor rock art. It's an amazing location, very culturally significant, and it's called Murujuga in Nullama and Nullama language, and that roughly translates as hip bone sticking out. So it's about place and country to a large degree, but it's about looking at the world through the lens of that place or through the Pilbara. And what we do is, in the last 2 hours of what would have been John Pat's life, with the Pat family looking on and holding the show and all the permissions for the show, we look at the history of the world since 1602, which is one way of thinking about the start of globalisation, when the Dutch East India Company, sort of, or the VOC as it was called, was invented or came onto the world scene, and the hunger of those rich nations eventually swept across the Pilbara. And really, that was only, eight generations ago, and we're still in that tsunami now. Globalisation and everything that's happening up there is still playing out. And so I guess the John is looking for answers of how he can save himself. If only somebody would come. If only the local, police aide would come and look for him. Or if his mum would see if he was okay, then maybe he would be all right. And so he tries to change history. And in so doing, he's discovering all the things that went on, and so are we. It's very it's a massive show. It's very musical. A big cast of about 22, I think, on stage. All the music's created vocally, so it's sort of a cappella. It's very compelling a cappella. That's a good turn of phrase. And it's a hybrid media show. Lots of amazing people in it. Lex Marinos, Trevor Jamison, Melbourne's own Yumi, Japanese performer.
Yeah, yeah.
And, a whole range of people. So that's sort of the story.
And you performed it in Western Australia last year. How was it received by the community?
Actually, it was just last week. We performed it in Canberra last year as a first little outing for the centenary of Canberra. We approached Robin Archer to bring a work from that part of the world into the celebration of the nation's capital. And that was really cool. And then we went back and worked with the community some more to refine the story, and then we put it on in a prison. So this is about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago in Roebourne prison, and that was an amazing experience. It was a shortened version of the show, and then we did an outdoor Under the Stars version where, we're standing remote only in this outdoor amphitheatre to launch the Roebourne community cultural complex, and then we took it to Perth and did it down there. And each one of those, very different response in each place, but really exciting to do, and now we're bringing it into Flash Melbourne.
You presented it to community, and I guess you've got rave reviews in Perth, in the capital in Western Australia, about the show. But, I mean, how do people respond to it in terms of seeing their stories? I mean, because they're not often talked about, these deaths in custody stories or Indigenous justice. How do people respond from an Indigenous perspective, or how have they responded?
Yeah, look, the interesting thing with this one is that although it takes that as a setting for the work, it's actually, sounds counterintuitive to say, but it's really a white story, mm-hmm. in the same way that Keating's Redfern speech said, we took the children away, we did the dispossession, we took the land. So that word "we" is super critical to the way we should be framing Indigenous stories in this country, because always go, oh, it's a story of tragedy and misery and hardship and poverty and addiction and you know, a dying pillow. But that's not the Indigenous story. I think it's something that we need to take responsibility for. So the community have a very different response to the material in the show. They laugh at very different things. Mm-hmm. They cry at very different things. And it is a very emotional show, but it's also a cack. You know, the Mavis Pat, John's mother, is a very funny, wicked woman. And she's in the audience every night, you know, gives the audience a bit of a wave, and it's very special. So, it's always a different experience when you put it on out there. And that was standing room only and, you know, dogs and children and, you know, people running around. In fact...
always dogs in the community. Yeah.
There was one moment when there's a young boy who plays John Pat at the age he was, and a little baby boy about four wandered out on stage in the middle of everything, just at the moment of his passing, and said, "That boy wants his mum," and that's one of the lines of the show. He's calling for Mavis, and wow. it was just the most spine tingling and brilliant thing, because people have touched and laughed at the same time.
And you're presenting it at the Melbourne Festival, starting this Friday, the 17th of October, through until the 21st of October at the Playhouse. People can get tickets at melbournefestival.com, but you're also, you and Trevor Jamieson are doing an Artist in Conversation on this Thursday at 1 p.m. at the Foxtel Festival Club. Trevor's amazing to watch as an actor. What do you like to work with behind the scenes, and I guess with what you do in terms of community engagement and sort of getting stories and presenting them? How is Trevor in that sense?
Well, Trevor is a remarkable performer and a remarkable actor, and that's where people often require Trevor to be some other cultural ambassador. Mm-hmm. He's a great performer, and yep. He has some things to say, and he and I have a sort of a symbiosis of, you know, working together. I'm a terrible performer if I had to do it, which I never would. And so, you know, there's a really lovely relationship in the way that I think it's a bit of a picture of where the country needs to go, of mm-hmm. working with, you know, each other's strengths and weaknesses. And I mean, in the rehearsal room the other day, I had a bit of a yell at him and he had a bit of a yell at me, and then we sort of laughed it off, you know, and that's the world of it. So there is that artist conversation, which will bring quite different perspectives and things to it. There's also, you know, Big Arts doing some masterclasses here for people interested in this kind of work. That's at ACME, and we've got a retrospective of 22 years of films. And there's a forum about Indigenous rates of incarceration. So, you know, 51% of all the young people in prison in Australia are Indigenous children, which is an outrage. And we really want to make a difference to that, so that's all linked into this show, and we've just begun a kind of a strategy to point people to other organisations who are trying to bring about change and looking at justice reinvestment and those kinds of things. And that's the 1 in 2 Unlock the Future .org.au is a website you can go to that will drive you to other places of change. And you know, if the Prime Minister is serious about being the Prime Minister for Indigenous Affairs, it has to happen now. He's got 24 months. And to me, this is the most telling. This is a real litmus test, and it's the one thing that has to change.
Thanks, Scott, for coming in and chatting to us. It's been wonderful having you. All the best with the season and all the activities that are happening around the Melbourne Festival with Big Heart. Emma?
I just want to thank Scott for coming in. It's been great to hear from you, and I'm looking forward to seeing the show. I haven't actually seen any of your work yet, but Brian has been raving about it for the last couple of weeks, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, great. Thanks a lot.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh yeah, that was Southbound by Sal Kimber and the Rolling Wheel. And we're actually been celebrating Australian art this week on Lefty Pinko's, chatting to Scott Rankin from Big Heart. And we're celebrating Australian music too, aren't we, Emma?
We are. That was another local band, so that I've seen live as well. So
yeah. No, just fantastic. I've actually really enjoyed tonight's music. I like a bit of twang. I like a bit of kind of, you know, like a thoughtful acoustic track. And tonight's been some really lovely stuff. So who have you plucked out and played tonight? Can you just maybe give us a wrap-up of the music?
I think it was the Jezebels that we started with, Butterfly Boucher as well, who's based in the States now. That was Sal Kimmerer and the Rolling Wheel. And I think we're going to hear from the Rosie Burgess Trio as well, another local act. So I'm just exposing you to a bit of new music.
You're a bit of a live gig kind of person, aren't you? Like, you like a live gig, don't you?
I do, yeah. I haven't, unfortunately, haven't been able to get to do much lately, but, you know, we're coming towards summer, so maybe I'll get out a bit more.
Get out and about, yeah. And I guess just to, like, wrap up the show, because we've probably got about 2 minutes left, I think, and, yeah, I just want to kind of, again, push people to go and check out Hip Bone Sticking Out. It's on it as part of the Melbourne International Arts Festival. It runs from this the 17th until the 21st of October. But yeah, Big Heart are actually involved with a lot of different events and activities as part of this year's festival. And there's also a conversation with Scott Rankin and Trevor Jamieson this Thursday at 1 p.m. at the Foxtel Festival Club. And they'll also present an arts masterclass called Content and Process, A New Virtuosity. And so if you've kind of been interested in, I guess, the content of how they work and how they go about engaging with people and their philosophies and whatnot, I do encourage you to go and check out their content and process workshop, their masterclass. And that'll happen on Friday the 24th and Saturday the 25th of October. They're also going to have a bit of a film program that same night, or those same nights rather, at ACME at the Australian Centre for Movie and Image. And they're going to actually be filming, I guess, a bit of a retrospective on their company's history. 22 Years of Big Heart is the name of the two film nights. So get along to those things. And if you want any information about these, we'll plug them on our Lefty Pinko's website. But go to www.melbournefestival.com for all details. You can buy tickets. You can check out what's free and what's not. And but yeah, I do encourage you to go and check out Hip Bone Sticking Out. We also put up a little bit of a video of the production. Did you get a chance to check that out, Emma?
Like, I did, and it just looks amazing.
Yeah, didn't it? Like, it's phenomenal. So, yeah.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.